This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 31.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. On the Soulful PR Podcast, we often talk about traditional media and we talk about traditional ways of PRing your business. So we talk about getting coverage in newspapers, in magazines, on radio and TV. But actually, I really believe that PR goes far beyond that. It's everything about the way that you show up in the world with your business and brand. So it's about email list building, it's about webinars, it's about how you use social media. And my guest today, Mariah Coz, she is an absolute whiz at promoting her brand in some of these ways. And she's going to be sharing some really, really practical, actionable tips that you can put into action in your business that will make a real difference to your brand, really help you promote your brand. And she also gives me some tips on how I could improve the way that I'm promoting my brand. So some of which I've put into action, actually. So I think you're going to find that quite interesting too. A funny thing, actually, before we got on the call, we had a bit of a chat, me and Mariah, about the fact that she was called Mariah. And I was saying in the UK, we generally have Maria and Marie, but we don't really do Mariah. And you'll notice that at the beginning, I really practiced saying Mariah, 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 Mariah. And then what's the first thing I say to her in the interview? I call her Maria. But anyway, you hear that I correct myself. So that's quite amusing. But before we get on to the interview, I just wanted to mention that my Soulful PR for Starters program is now open. That's my online self-study course in how to do your own PR. So in this online program, I take you through everything you need to do to get coverage in newspapers, in magazines, on radio and TV, from how to put a press release together, how to put a pitch together, how to make a pitch to a journalist. It's all there. And there's also some really great bonuses, interviews with journalists from The Guardian, from The Huffington Post, and from the BBC, talking about the kind of stories that they're looking for and the best ways to pitch them. So if you want to have a look at that, I'll link to that program in the show notes. But now on with the main part of the show. So joining me on the show today, I've got someone who is really a bit of a heroine to me. So somebody that I turn to when I'm looking for answers for challenges in my business. So if I'm looking for wisdom on how to build my email list or how to do better webinars or how to create pinnable images or whatever it might be, my guest today is somebody who I often gain inspiration from in building my online business. So I thought it would be really great to bring her on the show and get her to share some of her wisdom with you. So joining me is Mariah Coz, and her site is Femtrepreneur. And I'm just going to kick off by asking you, Mariah, if you can just tell us a little bit about you.
Well, thank you so much, Janet, for having me on the show. I am Mariah Coz. I run the blog Femtrepreneur.co. I am from Boston, Massachusetts. And I started Femtrepreneur a couple months ago now, actually. People kind of tend to think it's been around for longer than it has. I sometimes get emails from people that are like, oh, I've been following you for years. And I'm like, it's only been up since January. But I started Femtrepreneur earlier this year in order to sort of share my experiences from running my own online businesses for the past 7 years. So even though Femtrepreneur is fairly new, I have been doing online business for the last 7 years. I've had, you know, physical product businesses. I've had online boutiques. I've had blogs. I've sold consulting and coaching and design services, all sorts of different, you know, products, ebooks, courses, everything in the last 7 years I've been doing that. So it's definitely been an evolution. And I started Femtrepreneur to sort of start sharing, I guess, the ways that I was doing things differently. I think that I would Google stuff and I would look things up. And I always felt like the way that people were suggesting how to grow your blog and how to make money online and all this stuff, I just felt like, man, that stuff does not work for me. But there's all these other things that no one's talking about that really is working for me. So I started kind of talking about that stuff. And I think maybe that's why it stood out to so many different people, just because it's like, a different perspective, I guess, on making your online business more profitable.
Wow. And I have to say, I didn't realize that it'd only been around since January, because it feels to me like I've been going to your site to get insight and advice and tips for ages. So that's even kind of news to me. It's amazing. So what is it that really kind of inspires you? Have you always been somebody who's been attracted to the kind of entrepreneurial world?
Yeah, I definitely always thought that I'd rather be homeless than have a real job. And I could never have, I'm like unemployable. Like I could never get along with a boss. The minute someone tries to tell me what to do, I'm just like, have an attitude. Like I just could never have normal jobs. So there was definitely, when I turned 18, I started my first business, which was an online vintage clothing boutique. And it was profitable right away. You know, I was making my full-time income right from the first month. But it was definitely something where I was like, went from unemployed to self-employed, because there wasn't a lot of room for me to, you know, have a day job in between. I just never could really do that, which is good. I mean, like it definitely what came from a place of like, failure is not an option. You know what I mean? Like I can't not do this. I have to be independent. I have to be in control of my own thing. I have to be in control of my time and the way that I spend my time. I just always was like, acutely aware that I would be wasting my time spending it on anyone else than like my own businesses.
Wow. And I can totally kind of relate to that. I think I'm completely unemployable as well. And I think probably lots of the people listening will feel the same. I left a secure job in teaching to retrain as a journalist and could have gone and got a job, but actually decided that freelancing would be better, even though everyone told me that it was really, really difficult. And 15 years later, you know, I've not only sort of had a successful career in freelance journalism, but also have built up, you know, various kind of businesses along the way. And I feel exactly the same.
Yes. I mean, especially my parents, they definitely wanted me to go to college and get a job and do all this stuff. And I was just like, I don't know how to explain that I can't do that. Like, it's just fundamentally not going to happen. I was just like, I'll do whatever it takes to not, just like, you know, you hear that quote that's like, oh, we'll work 80 hours a week to not work 40 hours a week. And I was just like, I will do whatever it takes to not have to have a real job. And I think that that kind of like, just no failure and no compromises has kind of gotten me to where I'm at now.
Wow. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on the show, because this is the Soulful PR podcast, is that you're absolutely great at publicizing yourself in so many different ways. Because like you say, you've only been, Femtrepreneur has only been around since January, but it feels like it's been around forever.
Right.
What are the methods that you've used to publicize yourself? It feels like you're firing on lots of different cylinders. You're doing lots of different things.
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. And especially because for me, I don't even feel like I know what PR is really. Like to me, PR is like the word like marketing. It's so big. It's like there's so many different strategies. There's so many different things you can do. It's such a big, broad word. And then when I try to think about how I do it for myself, I think the main thing is probably webinars. And I show this graph on my website and when I do my webinar about webinars, just the market. If you look at all of the charts from my traffic, my income and my email subscribers, if you look at all of that data on a single chart, it's like the month that I started doing webinars, which was March of this year, everything just shot up. I mean, everything is like a hockey stick. It's so clear. It's like night and day. From just that pivot point when I started doing webinars. And that's what I would say in terms of PR and publicity and like getting out there, it's been the number one thing. But the caveat to that is just that the way that I do it is specifically with another person every single week. Mm. So I'm not necessarily doing a lot of webinars by myself. I'm always partnering up with someone else who already has a big audience. So it's kind of what I like to call like network hacking. So for me, I'm like getting in front of a new 100,000 people every single week by partnering up with all of these other people with bigger audiences than mine. And if you look at my audience, you can see, because in our system, we have everyone tagged and we know where everyone came from. But every single person in my audience is from one of those webinars with someone else's audience.
Wow.
So it's like a patchwork of all these different groups. And it's just really interesting because I think like in terms of scaling publicity, the webinars is like I don't know any other way that you could get in front of such big audiences all the time so quickly.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I know certainly for my business that webinars are a really big driver and a really big way for me to collect yes. email addresses and keep in touch with people. And I thought it was so interesting that you said that, you know, I don't even know what PR is. And I mean, that's actually a challenge that I have. I mean, I teach people PR in the kind yeah. of traditional sense. So I teach people how to get into newspapers, magazines, and on radio and TV. But also, I mean, I'm always really fond of saying to people, well, you can't just do that alone. That's just one piece of the jigsaw. You also have to be doing your social media. You have to be doing webinars and you have to be doing email marketing. You have to be doing the whole thing. You can't just rely on that kind of one piece. And actually, when people mm-hmm. come to me often as potential clients, when I have like a first conversation with them, often it's about that because they kind of, they've heard of PR and they think, oh, yeah, I think that would be really good for my business. But they're not really sure. Is it getting in newspapers and magazines? Is it marketing? Is it social media? Right. And the conversation we normally have initially is kind of trying to sort that out. And actually for me, it's really about everything. So that's why I was really kind of interested to see which was your kind of biggest driver. So after webinars, is it email marketing? Because I mean, I'm on your email list and I get your emails and Mariah writes incredible emails that you want to open and really kind of catchy email subject lines and all the things that you should do. Is that your next biggest driver? Is it email?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, for sure. I mean, it's such a product of what I focus on. So if I focus all of my energy on emails and webinars, it's obvious that that's why those things are so important to my business. It's obvious that those are the kind of, like you said, the driving forces. I mean, it's where all of my sales come from, a combination of email marketing and webinars. And a huge portion of that is email marketing. I've spent so much time crafting those emails. I mean, a lot of people just, they have an email list or they don't have an email list. They don't know what to write. I just pour like hours and hours into writing those emails every week. And I think it's part of just sort of like, yeah, like you said, like getting people excited that they're going to open it and that there's going to be something really valuable in there, or there's going to be like a secret in there, or there's going to be something personal or emotional, all of those things. It's definitely like webinars and then email. And they're almost kind of the same. I actually tell people that one of the biggest mistakes that I see people make is not using those two things together in an integrated system. And instead, we see a lot of people who focus on webinars but neglect email, or people who are all about the email but they're too scared to go on webinars. So they end up just doing one or the other. When I found like the perfect integration is when you use those things together, and it's just like an explosion of effective marketing.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really, really good point. And in terms of your webinars, you've got, I probably ought to mention what kind of products you sell. So you've got a range of courses, oh, yeah. haven't you? So can you just talk us through the courses that you've got?
Yes, absolutely. How explicit can I be? Just because one of my courses is not sure what the rating we have to keep on this. But I do have Your First 1K, which is a list building course. That was the first course I came out with for Febtrepreneur. And then Webinar Rockstar, specifically all about how I grew my business 10x this year with webinars. So went from making, I think we did like 100 to almost 1 million this year mm-hmm. just from doing webinars, which is crazy. And then we have Fuck Yeah Funnels, which is just meant to make sales funnels, which sounds like so boring. I mean, sales funnels, it's like so boring. It's not, you know, no one wants to do it. No one wants to think about it. So I try to make it interesting. I try to make it fun. I try to make it not boring. So Fuck Yeah Funnels is like sales funnels for people who, you know, don't want their business to suck. Right. And then, yeah. And then recently we launched Your Signature Course, which is sort of a culmination of all of those things and creating that sort of flagship signature offering and program that you can launch again and again. It's your signature thing. You become known for it. It positions you as an expert. So that was the most recent launch that we had. So yeah, those are the main things on my docket right now.
And you've created all of those in what, less than a year, all of those,
yeah.
those courses?
Yeah, actually, this was a really intense year. And I knew that going into it. I knew that this was an intense year of creation. And it's great because once you've created those programs, going forward, the work never ends. I mean, you're still marketing and promotion, like, you know, coming up with all these different promotions and doing joint ventures. And there's still a lot of work, but at least like you never have to make it again.
Yeah,
never have to make the course again.
Yeah, no, I'm
unless you want to.
Yeah, I've just launched my first kind of online sort of off the shelf program. I've got a coaching program, but I've just and that is such a relief. I did a very kind of soft launch where I opened it up for a few days, and I'm going to do a bigger launch next year. For various reasons, I decided just to keep it kind of quite low key this year.
Yeah.
And but it's such a relief knowing that going into it next year, I'm gonna have to do the marketing side, which is my favorite bit anyway.
Exactly.
But I've created the fact I've created all those resources, and all I need to do now is sort of tweak them a bit based on the feedback that I get from the current group.
Yes.
It's such a great feeling, and knowing that you've created those resources, which is just amazing. I mean, I watched your webinar the other day actually about doing great webinars, I think it was.
Awesome.
And it's just so great to be able to kind of learn from other people out there who are kind of excelling in a particular space. And you do seem to be like a natural marketeer. You do seem to be somebody who just kind of really understands how to sell to people. And one of the things in your webinar that I came to, which I really loved, was that you broke it down into kind of stages. So, and you made it so simple, like kind of like the first stage is to educate. The second stage is to agitate, which is kind of to get people kind of feeling a bit like, oh, well, I probably should do something about this, and I haven't really.
Yeah,
and then
feeling like they're like, oh man, like I made all these mistakes and I didn't reach my goals. And then you're like, but I can help you.
Yeah. And it was, you know, and then they're kind of offering the solution. And I kind of just loved the way that you did that. And what role does, I mean, webinars and email marketing obviously works really well for you. What role does social media play for you?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, I am terrible at social media. I think I have a decent Twitter following, but it's not something that I focus on, because here's the thing, everyone focuses on the wrong stuff. And it's just like I said, the reason my email list is such a huge asset in my business is because I focused on it and because I built it, and it's where I pour my energy. Same thing with that in webinars. I didn't pour my energy into social media, and therefore, you know, the results aren't there. But it's also, statistically speaking, social media has the lowest conversion rates of any platform. So if you're going to be selling something, you do not want to have a big social media presence, because it's going to convert at like less than 0.01%. Whereas email converts at 3%. My email list converts at 10%, which is crazy. And webinars convert at up to 40%. So you just want to be kind of, you know, people, I think a lot of times want the big following, and it feels a little bit like fame, but it doesn't always translate into financial success or sales, which is my main priority. I've always been really clear about the difference between like popular but poor, and like successful but less popular on social media. So
yeah. That's really interesting, because with social media, it's a case of I always see it as kind of like you just keep popping up and keep reminding people that you're there. And for me, with obviously I teach people how to get press coverage, it's, you know, it's really important that once people get press coverage that they don't just kind of like, you know, go, phew, I've got that now, and then forget about it. Obviously sharing it on social media and reminding people that's out there can be really, really kind of important. And one question I wanted to ask you about email marketing actually is, so I've got quite a decent size list, but and I think we chatted about this briefly before I came on the call, because I think I'm getting more people from all over the world now, but initially it was quite UK focused, my list. And I found that particularly in the UK, because we are a little bit more, I think, reserved, and I know we don't generally like selly stuff. Well, I mean, that's perception. This is totally my perception. Is that
it's interesting. I've heard that from my other UK friends, business owners are like, oh, you know, I love your strategies, but I can't do all of them because it's just not British.
Yeah, And there is totally this sense that I know if I email people, I have to keep a really close eye on my email, how many emails I send, because I will get people emailing me saying, you know, well, actually email me to say, do you know what? I wanted to bring your attention to the fact that you've emailed me too much recently, and this really is not on. And whereas, like, you know, I would just, if somebody sent me a few too many emails, I'd either unsubscribe quietly or I probably would just delete it.
That is so funny. Actually, now that you're saying that, I'm thinking about me and my other friends here, and just how we've all received that like email from a British lady that's like a little bit perturbed and explains to us why she's like unsubscribing because like we sent one too many emails and it's like, okay, but that's so funny that that's like a real thing.
No, I think it really is. And I do have to be, and I've got people on my email list who I think really like what I do and are really engaged with what I do. So they'll forgive me, you know, if I send a bit too many, they'll forgive me. But there are certain people I know. I mean, I sent an email out earlier on today about a brilliant event that I'm running tomorrow, which is where I've got an editor from the Daily Mail, which is obviously our biggest selling, and internationally it's a really big selling newspaper, who is, I'm running an event in London where she's coming to talk. And I in the subject header, I put Daily Mail event, just because I wanted to remind people that they needed to book their tickets. And my unsubscribes were a lot bigger than they normally are. And I think it's because in the Brits, we don't like the Daily Mail. Generally, people have a bit of a thing about it. And I looked at those stats and I thought, that's because I put Daily Mail in the header. I should have been a bit cleverer about that because it's a great event.
Oh, yeah. You got to be like, how am I going to make them like excited? How am I going to make it sound a little bit like a little secret or like curious? Like there's so much like little like thought processes. I mean, I didn't really study that or anything, but I think over time, you just, like you said, you'll learn that next time you'll come up with a one. And having done this for so many years, you definitely get better at like, what are people going to open? What are people going to be interested in? You know, you notice what kind of emails get the best responses, what kind of emails you get like replies to. There's definitely, and it just takes time to kind of figure that out.
Yeah. And it's tough, isn't it? Because while you're learning, you know that you may be, because I sent that one in a rush today, but and normally I would think of a way that was more engaging. But I was just like, well, I really need to send this out and I need to let people know because it's a great event and I don't want them to miss out. But as you're learning, obviously you're making mistakes as you go and you're getting things right and you're getting some things wrong. And there was one that I sent out, which is quite funny, which was, what are you doing? What are you doing tomorrow afternoon? It was a webinar one. And I thought, I'll give this a try and see what, you know. And I honestly, I had about 15, 20 people emailing me back saying, oh, I really thought you were inviting me for coffee. I'm really disappointed now.
That's so funny. Whenever I see those, I'm like, they look like they're like personal emails. And I'm like, oh, awesome. This person knows who I am. And then I'm like, oh, wait.
So it really is. I mean, from what you're saying, it's what I've thought all along. I mean, I've been sort of doing this more seriously, maybe for a year or so, and really getting into by using Infusionsoft and really kind of trying to dig into it. But for those who don't know what Infusionsoft is, it's dubbed Confusionsoft often. It's an email marketing tool that you can use, and it helps you kind of segment your audience and kind of, you know, group them and tag them according to how they behave.
Yeah, the way that we've, and that's so great that you do that. And so many people don't, I feel like so many people get overwhelmed by that idea. And so they don't start segmentation, and it's so important. I mean, not to get too much into the nitty gritty, but we actually do the exact same thing, but we use ConvertKit. It's like supposedly, you know, it's like kind of has the same features as Infusionsoft, but it's much simpler to use. And so, especially during this last launch, you know, being able to tag people and send them specific emails just based on their behavior. I mean, I knew exactly who had visited my sales page, when they saw this, you know, did they come to the webinar? What did they do? Did they click on this button? You know, what are they interested in? It's like everyone is tagged and segmented based on their behavior. And then I can really target the right emails to the right people. Because I'm not going to keep sending launch emails to people who didn't open any of them. You know, they're not interested. So I can just exclude them. And by really honing in on like, who's that little group of people in your audience that's like really close to buying? It's just worked really well to do that instead of just like spraying and praying.
Yeah. And I know, so one thing I've done recently is to, you can see the people, if you've got a program out there, you can see the people who've looked, and just to send them a little email and saying, you know, I noticed you've been looking at this before you close your cart. You can say, oh, you know, just remind them that it's happening, but also afterwards you can go back and ask them why they didn't buy. And so there's all sorts of things you can do, but obviously in the UK we have to be a bit careful because you do sort of, I think people behave differently, and that's part of the kind of learning curve really. And one reason I was really keen to have you on the show actually was because I read something you wrote about guest content and pitching guest content. How have you got on with that? Has that played a part in your kind of publicity and kind of creating a buzz around your brand?
It was definitely, in the beginning, it was the number one thing that I did. And so in the beginning, really before I started doing webinars, and I do recommend that everyone does a bit of guest posting before they start doing a bunch of webinars, because you do need to have that like initial sort of small audience, at least just to begin. And so how I did that starting from zero was guest posting. And so what I would do is just offer basically the most valuable. I mean, I would make it a point to write way better blog posts for other people's blogs than my blog, because more people were going to see it on those blogs than would see it on my blog. You know, like I didn't have an audience. So it's much more important that you guest blog. You know, people have this really backwards idea where they think, oh, I need to have 10 blog posts on my blog before I start promoting it. Or, oh, my blog needs to look like it's full of blog posts before I start, you know, really getting myself out there. It's the opposite. You need to not focus on your blog at all until you start getting yourself out there on other people's blogs to other people's audiences. Because it really doesn't make any sense to be like blogging to a ghost because no one is reading your blog.
Yeah. And I guess it's taking your areas of expertise and offering that to people whose audience might find value in that. And it's interesting, some of the press coverage that I've got, I've written a whole series of articles for The Guardian about how to get press coverage. And so one of the pieces I've written, which I've probably mentioned before on this podcast, which is about how to write a press release, it sends traffic to my, essentially it is a guest post, even though it's, you know, it's for the traditional media, if you like, it's for The Guardian, but essentially it's a guest post. It's for their small business network. And it sends traffic back to my site all the time. And people turn up at events and say, oh, I'm here because I read your piece, or they sign up for my courses. And I say, well, how did you first find me? Oh, I read that piece that you wrote on The Guardian. So essentially that's guest posting as well. So I guess guest posting isn't just on other people's blogs, but it could also be on bigger sites, you know, like The Guardian or The Huffington Post, or could be Forbes or Business Insider. You could go that route as well.
And sometimes I talk about this too on my blog, where sometimes the guest post is not actually a guest post. Sometimes the best way to get that link and get that feature is to be a case study or be someone that is a successful testimonial or a successful sort of case study. Like if I might not actually let you write a blog post for me, but if you, let's say you read a blog post of mine and you implemented it and you got some good results, I might feature your story as a case study. I might put that blog post together. You know, it might be in my words, but it's all going to link to you and it's going to feature you. Mm. And I think that that's kind of like, a lot of people think, oh, I have to write the blog post, but all you have to do is sort of, you know, whether it's for a company that you used or a product that you used, you just have to be a successful example for them. And they're going to want to promote you everywhere because you've shown that their strategies are successful or their product works or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point, actually, because I find that lots of people get put off doing traditional PR, so pitching stories into like newspapers, magazines, radio and TV, or particularly newspapers and magazines, and guest blogging, because maybe they're not confident about their writing and they'll procrastinate about it for such a long time because they're scared that if somebody says yes, are they going to be able to come up with the goods? But that's, actually, I hadn't really thought about that before, but going to people who've got big blogs and saying, look, I've tried out your practices, they've worked really well, and getting featured as a case study could be just as good for you as long as you get a link to your website. I imagine it could be really great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's been my strategy more so than the actual guest blogging. I did that a few times, but I realized that being a case study, even, you know, it doesn't have to be a blog post either. It could be like, you know, a lot of people will ask me, oh, well, do you want to do a quick interview based on the results that you got from taking that course or, you know, reading that blog post, or something like, oh, I use like Lead Pages, and I say, oh, I've had so much success, like Lead Pages, the software has really helped me. And then Lead Pages features me on their blog as, you know, look what this person was able to do with our product. And I feel like it's not even, it's like you said, like, I don't even have to really do anything other than provide the results.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I hadn't even thought about that. And I call myself a PR person.
I'll send you the blog post. I have a blog post that goes through how to do that and how I've done it. And it includes email scripts of what exactly I send out to people when I'm getting those types of gigs. Like, not gigs. And it's like, it's not even a guest post, but when I'm getting those types of situations, the kind of emails that I send to them, basically just saying, hey, you know, I read this blog post, you know, I spent 30 days implementing what you said to do. And now here's a screenshot of my traffic. It really worked. And then they email you back and they're like, oh my gosh, please let me, you know, let me post this on my blog and blah, blah, blah. So.
Oh, it's such a great idea because obviously you and I both know if somebody that I'm working with, they come to me and say, oh, as a result of that advice that you've given me, I got this article in the Telegraph or the Daily Mail or the Huffington Post, then I immediately say, oh, can I use that in my marketing? So I hadn't thought about doing it that way around. So it's brilliant. And for those people listening who don't know about lead pages, it's a tool that you can use to create landing pages. So, I mean, I use, they've also got lead boxes now as well. So when you come to my website and you sign up to one of my free courses, like how to write press releases or whatever, then the box that pops up will be created by them. But you can have landing pages for all sorts of things, can't you? Like your 404 page if people land on on a link that doesn't work. And
we have them redirecting from old webinars. So anytime that someone tries to go to like a webinar from like 2 months ago or something, it'll redirect to a lead page that's like this, like, oh, whoops, you missed that webinar, but make sure you sign up here to get onto the next one, so they don't just see like a blank page.
Yeah, and it's got, I mean, they're so kind of easy, these lead pages, to, it's almost a bit like kind of like PicMonkey or Canva, the kind of design tools. It's almost not like drag and drop, but it's kind of that kind of easy, isn't it? That you can kind of just
super easy.
Really, really easy. And I use them a lot. But funnily enough, I've been reading some of Mariah's posts about how I can make more use of them, because I know I've still got that kind of thing that she's describing, you know, where you've done a webinar and somebody, I mean, this happens to me all the time. I do a webinar and then two months later, somebody suddenly signs up for it because they've suddenly found the email in their inbox. And then obviously it's sending them to a dead page. And that's something that I'm working on at the moment in my business, is almost to kind of make sure that all those dead ends have got a kind of like, oh, you missed this, but if you want this, you can sign up, you know, and this is why lead pages is so brilliant. So yeah, we can link to that blog post in the show notes. That would be brilliant, about how to kind of get featured almost as a guest poster without having to write the post, which is absolutely genius.
Yes, I should have called it that. I just called it how to write a good guest blog, but I should be like how to get a guest blog without writing a guest blog. That's like really good, like headline copy.
That's the journalist in me that's like always jumping on the top line. So whenever anybody says anything, I always kind of like crunch it down into as few words into a headline. Whenever anybody says anything. No, it's really great. And I think people are going to find that really, really useful. And do you have any sort of pitching tips? I mean, I imagine people probably pitch you as well a lot.
Yeah. And you know, they're terrible at it. It's like most people are just like the worst at pitching. But you know what? You just have to be really specific. You just have to make it about them. So many people pitch, but it sounds like it's like just for them. And you're just like, man, I do not have time to like help you out with this. Like, how is this going to help me? And the most successful pitches I get and that I send are just really focused on the benefit for them. And it doesn't even sound like I'll get anything out of it. It just sounds like a ton of value. And whether I'm pitching someone on doing a joint webinar or doing a guest post or doing an interview or just whatever it's going to be, I always just frame it in a way of like, this is for you. And like, I don't know what I'm going to get out of it, but obviously you get just some exposure. But I do think like being specific, whenever I'm pitching someone, I also try to be really specific, especially with webinar stuff. I try to be like, if you do want to do a webinar together, this is how many people on average sign up. This is how many people on average will purchase. This is how many people, you know, you might get on your list. It's just like very, just trying to quantify it a little bit. Like I have this many subscribers or my audience is this size. And it helps people kind of understand that it will be worth their time. So often I get pitches from people that are just a big ask, and there's no reason for me to do that. Not because I'm a mean person, but just because I'm like, this doesn't, or you're just like, did you even read what my blog is about? Like, this is not a good fit. I don't understand. But I do think almost like pitching without pitching. It's just like, if you contact someone and you give them the info, I always feel like try to not make it too pitchy. Just try to be casual and be like, here, it would be really, like, sometimes I'll just email someone, I'll be like, man, it would be so cool to do a webinar together. Like, wouldn't that be fun? Instead of it being like, hello, my name is Mariah. I would like to do a webinar. And like, I just try to keep it casual. And I think that's kind of why people respond to it, because it doesn't feel like a robot pitching them.
And this whole pitching thing is so interesting, because I mean, one of the reasons that I started the business that I started, because as a journalist, I was being pitched to all the time. And I just noticed how terrible people were at pitching the media. And the thing was, you know, they pitched The Guardian. You know, I'm a an education specialist, and they pitched the education section of The Guardian. And it would be quite clear that they had never even looked at the section. They never really looked at the kind of stories that we ran and what we were interested in. And so immediately you're kind of feeling a bit affronted, because somebody, it's like going for a job interview and not swatting up on the company that you want to work for. And so immediately you've kind of got this like negativity towards the person, because they're kind of trying to get you to give them some space in your newspaper, and there isn't much space to be had. But they're not kind of trying to think about what you would want. It's almost like, I mean, sometimes I kind of use a dating analogy. It's like kind of, you know, like if you're trying to kind of pull somebody, we would say in the UK, then, you know, you wouldn't kind of go and you wouldn't kind of come up with ideas if you're going out for a first date of all things that you like to do. You probably try and like to think about things that they like to do and that they're interested in. But this is the thing. And I think, you know, and I pitch to lots of podcasts myself, and also I'm pitched to a lot now for my blog and my podcast. And I see that it's always about me, me, me. And the people who come and say, look, I really think I could offer you some value because I know about this, and I think maybe your audience would like to know about this. And I've also got so many people on my list, and I've got this many followers on Twitter, and I think this could be good for us both. Then that's kind of really, that really hits the spot. But I think with pitching, there's a sort of blind spot where sometimes people kind of get so kind of nervous because they are pitching something that they kind of forget that human touch, which is just kind of like, hey, we could, you know, perhaps we can help each other out on this. I'll give you this, and this will be great for your audience, and then maybe you'll get this out of it. But I think people kind of miss that, don't they? It's kind of like a glaring.
It's such a good point. I mean, it's like you said, it's the human touch. It's like people are so afraid of looking unprofessional. Meanwhile, I'm over here like never wearing pants and swearing all day long. And it's like the fact that I don't come off as a professional person hasn't hurt my business. But like in general, it's just like people, like you said, they get into this mode where they think, oh, this is how I'm supposed to act and how I'm supposed to sound. And every time I read an email like that, I'm just like, oh my gosh, no, you sound so boring. Like, do not talk like this. I mean, you just got to be a human. And yeah, it's weird. It's like, and it's like you said, just being honest about who it benefits. It's like, oh, this is good for both of us because you get this and I get this. And I sometimes even have to frame that, like, this is good for you because you get this many email subscribers, and it's good for me because I get this much exposure, or I'll get to meet your audience or something. But it's good to just lay out, this is the truth about why I'm pitching you, and this is the truth about what you can expect and why it would benefit you as well. It is strange how people get so nervous about it, and then it ends up almost hurting them by being so trying to do it almost like too perfectly.
Yeah, no, and I totally get that. And people want to do business with people, don't they? They don't want to do business with kind of robots sometimes.
Yes, but exactly.
I find people, when it comes to pitching, people can kind of turn into robots. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about, which I love your content around, is content upgrades. And I've been swatting up on some of your stuff on this recently. So this is when, for those people who are, you know, newish to blogging or haven't thought about doing this before, this is when people come to your site and they might read a valuable blog post that you've got, and you want, if they like your content, you want to kind of keep that relationship going. So you offer them some kind of freebie or bonus they need to give you their email address for, which might be a checklist, or it could be a video, or it could be a mini webinar, or all sorts of things. I was looking at Mariah's site earlier actually to get some kind of more inspiration from my own. And this is something that you're a kind of real genius at. I'm experimenting with it a lot at the moment and trying to find what works for my audience, because that's something I've learned with all of this online business stuff, is that just because something works for, you know, super duper successful online entrepreneur over there, that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to work for me and my audience. So you have to kind of try things out. And what would be your sort of top tips on content upgrades around that sort of area?
That's a great question. I do think that things that are, doesn't have to be super hard to make, but things that are extra valuable that don't, you know, that get people excited are things like videos or tutorials or something that helps. I always say that the article is sort of this like the how and the what, but then the content upgrade might help someone implement it a little bit easier. So maybe, you know, you write a blog post about why you need, you know, the 5 different sizes of promo images you should make for each blog. And then as a content upgrade, you have a Photoshop file that's like a template that people can use. So it's usually for me, like the blog post is this content about this topic. And then the content upgrade is something that's going to make it a little bit easier for them to actually take action and do it for themselves because it's a little piece that's just like, here's what you need to get started. And that can be a checklist. It can be a video. It can be a technical walkthrough tutorial. It can be, like you said, you have webinars. I do. A lot of them are diagrams of stuff. Like, oh, you can fill out this, like, here's the diagram, the way that I map this out for my business. You know, here's a template that you can use for yourself and fill out your own information. I mean, Excel spreadsheets. This is so funny. I did this Periscope the other day. It was all about this. And we came up with like so many good, awesome ideas for content upgrades. We can definitely link to that in the show notes.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
There's so many different things. And like, just like you said, a lot of people ask me, oh, well, what's the best content upgrade? Which one should I create? And I'm like, you really do have to test it. And it's hard, even though I can see all the analytics for each lead box and each content upgrade, I can see which one is converting the highest, but a portion, you know, it's hard to make a definitive thing of, oh, this is the best content upgrade, mostly because, you know, it could be that that post gets a lot more traffic from Pinterest, or, you know, that post gets this or gets that. And for whatever reason, the conversions are higher, but it's hard to say definitively what like the best content upgrade is. But I would say just anything that makes it a little bit more actionable is what you want to do.
Yeah. And I guess it is such an important point about just kind of making sure that it's about testing, isn't it? And seeing what works with your audience. And I often find sometimes I get a bit confused when I'm looking at that because, you know, I might have had an article published in The Guardian, or I might have been on a podcast or something. So I'm trying to kind of work out, well, is it because has that spike in my traffic, or has that spike in signups? Is it because of those other things that are going on? Is it just because it's just a really great thing that I've created? So you know, a lot of it is kind of testing, isn't it? And just trying to kind of understand and trying to make a judgment, I guess.
Yeah. So are you able to do content upgrades back from articles in The Guardian and those other like online magazines, or?
No, unfortunately not. It'd be good if I could.
But yeah, I was wondering.
What I try and do is if I'm going on a podcast, so if I'm going on a big podcast or something like this Friday, I was just on quite a sort of big podcast. I just try and make sure that there's something really good on my own website and a really nice blog post. And that might be when I try and put a content upgrade there, because I know there's going to be more people coming to my site. So yeah, but unfortunately not. I mean, some of the podcasts that interviews that I've done, that, you know, we will kind of work together on a content upgrade. But yeah, unfortunately, that'd be really nice if you could do that, wouldn't it? That'd be really
good. I'm always curious. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people say, well, how do you get, you know, if you're writing a guest blog, not necessarily for a magazine or an online newspaper, but for a blog, if you're writing a guest post, how do you, you know, they feel so nervous about asking, oh, can I link to a content upgrade on my site? Because that's when content upgrades really work the best, is when they're good for optimizing your site, but they work the best when you write a guest post and then you make sure to have a content upgrade linked from the guest post, but the content upgrade is on your website and people are giving them your emails on your site in order to download it. So having that call to action in a guest post is where you're really going to leverage content upgrades. But so many people feel nervous, just like you said about pitching. People are like, oh, how am I going to ask them if I can link to that? Is that ethical? Blah, blah, blah. But it's people just framing it in the wrong way. Whereas I have this really good example in that blog post of someone who pitched me, and they totally, and this is the same thing I do. You frame the content upgrade. You're not saying, oh, because I want all those emails and that's why I'm doing this. You frame it in a way that's like, I want to make an extra bonus just for your readers. Like, I want to create an extra resource or a download or a template, or, you know, I want to create a bonus resource and it's just specifically for your readers. Is that okay? And then you just give them the link and you say, oh, can you just link to this? You know, instead of in my bio or my little byline, instead of just linking to my homepage, can you link to this page? And I created this free bonus just for your readers.
Yeah.
And that feels like a huge give, instead of saying, oh, I want to get email addresses, so, you know, I'm going to do this. It's just about the way that you talk about it.
Yeah, no, it's such a good idea. And as you were talking, I was thinking about some of the stuff that I write for The Guardian, because I often do kind of like how-to type things. And I was thinking, well, there's no reason why I couldn't, because I'm allowed at the bottom to put a link to my website. There's no reason why I couldn't create a landing page, for example, that had a free offer in it or something like that, and kind of, you know, link through my website.
And I mean, you should have like a welcome mat. Because I'm looking at your site now, I feel like you could have like, I'm like, oh, let's dive in.
No, this is brilliant. I love it.
I feel like you could have what we call a welcome mat or a cover page. And in Squarespace, it's called a cover page, but it's technically a welcome mat. And it's just this like splash page that instead of seeing your entire site and all of your links, and I see, you know, your blog and your sidebar and all these navigation links, instead of that, it's just one page and it just has one single call to action and one button. And it might just say like, want to get more PR for your biz? Like, download my free, you know, 10-point checklist, whatever it is. But it's just a splash page. If you go to femtrepreneur.co,
I'm on it now. Now you said that, I'm on it because I've seen it before.
It's like, download the free course. And it's a simple page. And so even if you are directing to your main website, the first thing they see would be what we call the welcome mat instead of just your entire site, which can be overwhelming. You know, people don't know where to click. People don't know what you offer. It's just, it's not that it's unclear. It's just kind of almost like being very like specific right up front and just saying like, here's one thing and you only need to make this one decision.
Yeah, no, I love it. And what I love about your site, because I was looking at this before and I was thinking about this before, because you've got a choice, haven't you? So it says on your site, learn exactly how I went from no dollars to 120K in 12 months. And then you can either get the free course or you can read the blog. So you've just got that choice, haven't you? You've just got that one choice to make. And I was looking at it earlier and thinking how good it was and thinking and thinking how I should be doing something like that. And I was reading on your blog about having this, is it a gateway you call it?
Welcome gate.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I love it that you've said that, because I think all of us who work in this space, I think there's always more to do, isn't there? And I constantly feel this kind of nagging thing like, oh, I need to try that, or I need to try that. And just, you know, be able to get these kind of tips is absolutely amazing. And one question I wanted to ask you before, actually, when we were talking about emails, but we got slightly off your tangent, was how much is too much? Do you have a sense of how many emails is too many to send? Because I was looking through my inbox before at some of the online entrepreneurs that I follow and looking at how often, and I was seeing that some people were emailing me every day, and I'm not bothered about that because I'm in the same space and I don't care, you know, like I wouldn't be sending rude, I wouldn't be that British woman sending the email saying, please don't email me anymore. but do you have a sense of how much is too much, or is it about the value that you're offering?
I think that's a really good question. I think that I am learning more about how to send daily emails. I think that there are companies and bloggers that are very successful at sending a short, valuable daily email. I think that it can sound like too much, but if the content is correct, if the content is good, and it's, I've seen case studies about like, if you send an email every day, what's the benefit and what's the drawback? But I think that it could be, I think that's the model I'm heading towards. It would obviously require like more editorial planning and more content. So it's something that I'm working on, but I do think daily emails can be done right. However, for me, there right now is definitely a fluctuation, because normally I would send one or two emails a week. One email would be a blog post. So I don't necessarily write an extra newsletter content. I just say, hey, here's a new blog post. Here's what you're going to learn. Go check it out here. And that's my way of communicating. Or I usually have a webinar, so I will email once about a webinar. So it's usually either blog post or webinar announcement or both. And then the other side of that is that when I'm launching, you can definitely tell I'm sending an email every single day. And in the last couple days of the launch, I'm sending like two or three emails every day, which is crazy. But it's like, you got to do the kind of stuff that makes you uncomfortable. And it's part of the reason it does, like, I mean, I probably got like maybe 800 unsubscribes from the last launch.
Wow.
But yeah, and that sounds crazy. I mean, that's like a lot of emails. And, you know, people think, oh, wow, that's like, you know, that's, some people, that's their whole list and it just unsubscribed. But for me, it's like, those are not my customers. And those people, you know, they just weren't interested. And it's almost like a filter to go through these like launch periods where you are sending emails every day and some people are going to unsubscribe and it's fine.
I mean, I always feel like my 16 unsubscribes I got for Daily Mail, which I was quite affronted by because I don't normally get that many, but I did feel like when I do get, actually, I'm sure I've had more than that. It was just that I noticed it was the Daily Mail, but I do always feel like, oh, well, actually those people probably were never going to do business with me. They probably didn't, you know, they were never probably going to come along to one of my events or buy a course. And, you know, maybe they'll still follow my blog and maybe they'll come back, you know, but I never feel too worried about it because I sort of feel the same. I think, well, they're probably not my customer. And if somebody sends me, you know, a sort of slightly mean email saying, I mean, I've had them where people have sent me things like, you know, sometimes if you send an email out that you have a mistake in it, and people jump on me because I'm a journalist by trade. But we had when I first started using Infusionsoft, this, for those who don't know it, this very, it's nicknamed Confusionsoft. The first sort of campaign that we did, we made a bit of a mistake and my whole list got an email that said that they'd signed up for this course and they shouldn't have done. And someone actually sent me an email, took me the time to send an email to say, your business is going to fail if you carry on like this. And I actually emailed this person back and just said, I think that's probably a little bit mean because we've all made mistakes. And actually, I got your email, but I also got 10 emails from people who said, oh, don't worry about it. We had the same thing when we started using a new system and kind of, you know, took it in their stride. And
yes, it's so strange when people are like, this is so unprofessional. And you're like, I don't know. Like, I'm just a person trying to figure it out. Like, leave me alone.
But I sort of thought, you know, when I get emails like that, although it kind of hurts at the time, I always think, well, that person, you know, they've obviously, I had somebody once, I sent an email, I was on holiday in Italy and they were like, I can't afford to go on holiday. I just find it so smug that you're sending an email because you're on holiday in Italy and I can't afford to get a holiday. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to change my whole business because you can't afford to go on holiday. And I think the thing is, I often think with those people, although it kind of stings a bit, you think, well, actually they probably weren't ever going to, you know, they may be signed up for something in particular, a free course or something, and they probably were never going to sort of engage with me any further. So you know, maybe it's for the best. But and it's just kind of how it works. Oh, I could just talk about this stuff for hours. It's just so much fun. But I guess I've taken up so much of your time. I probably ought to.
No, I love it. This has been so fun. This has been a genuinely really nice and really fun interview. Sometimes interviews are like, oh gosh, but this one is really good.
Well, it feels really real. And, you know, because I mean, I'm so excited. I love this whole space, online marketing. And, you know, I'm obviously, I'm kind of got a little bit of catching up to do with you, but I'm learning all the time. And I just love it. I find it so exciting. And I find it just so interesting, you know, seeing what works and what doesn't work. So it's always great to get on a call with somebody who's kind of in the same space. And where can people find you if they want to know more?
So guys, you can check out femtrepreneur.co. I know that it's a little hard to spell, so we'll definitely link to it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But femtrepreneur.co, and also include a couple freebies for you guys. I think it would be neat, especially since we talked about like courses and webinars. I have a couple checklists and downloads and videos that you guys can check out on my site, and we'll link to those as well. So that is awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I really, really enjoyed this.
Oh, that's just brilliant. And I'm so glad that you're offering those freebies, because I really like to have people on the show that personally I really like their stuff and I can really vouch for it. And this is totally the case in this one. So thank you so much. I've just enjoyed it so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, do head over to the show notes at janetmurray.co.uk/episode31. where you can get my free download, which is full of practical tips and strategies for email list building. So that's janetmurray.co.uk/episode31.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.